Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do you remember when Mick Ucknall trained with us?
That's right.
I just remember the night before the battle.
You struggle against him in the training. Someone get to Mick.
Well, Stevie lifted the trophy. I'm not on any picture. I'm at the back, stretching my calf, and you see, like, players have only played two games. Jamie.
Like, the thing is, Jake, he's doing all that, but, like, the ball's not even there yet, so even when they're walking over, I can go like that. And he...
I've just come up with a TV concept. The four of us are going to go in and manage a club.
You can. Who's what role?
Who's the manager? Who's
yeah, yeah, let's get that right.
What's my role?
These roles.
Oh, the sweets are
out.
The mini rolls, brilliant.
Yeah.
Probably going to have three today.
I'm gonna have one.
You're only gonna have one?
This is the one.
Mm.
Oh, this is the one.
What are we doing now? We're talking about something about European.
I like that quiz. What was the European one we did? The European
this
Cup winners.
What was that one?
Remember, it was like Red Star, yeah. Belgrade.
Oh, that was a good one.
I thought Monaco for some. I just saw the red and white. I thought it was Monaco. It weren't Monaco.
Porto beat them.
That's it, Mourinho's Porto.
I played in that game where he slid down the touchline.
It was a great slide, wasn't it?
Were you still
great
knee slide. Behind them?
That was a good Howard. Slide.
That was Phil. Phil gave away a silly free kick and Tim parried it. I know it's a team game, but...
I was suspended
for that.
You think about the ones that you missed a lot, don't you? I mean, you can't help it, can you?
Well, you're cutting into the show here, because the first question is what your best and worst times in Europe.
Oh, wow.
We're talking about them now, aren't we? So let's crack on with it while we're getting this done. I'm sorting out my dates for some holidays as
yes,
well.
Yes, please.
The mini retirement game.
Yeah, I need to relax.
I like your cool ones. It's really cool, eh?
Take my hand off to you. Well done.
It's nice, eh? Yes.
You just like, I was skiing the other night. It was like, no big deal.
It's really cool.
Thank you.
Are they raspberry?
Thank you very much.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Sorry, I don't understand.
I don't understand him. I've not understood him for 25 years, Siri.
These are amazing, aren't they?
They're nice.
Jesus Christ, they're so good.
I need to cut back.
Love you.
On my chocolate intake.
We had a lot of bad ones. We were in the Champions League every single season, and I'm going to run through them all now with you.
Hiya, Gary.
Wow.
Hiya.
Yeah. Gothenburg.
Ah, you'll come back. That's the 80s, surely.
Galatasaray.
One sec, Gary.
Proper intro. We've had a proper intro for the last 4 months. Yeah. Right.
Right, here we go. Right.
Welcome to Stick to Football, brought to you by Skybet. And this week, we're going to hand the show over to you. It's your community questions, and I'm joined by Roy, Ian and Cara. And the first are related to the Champions League, because it's nearly back with us. What are your best and worst moments playing in Europe with your club?
Oh, the worst.
We had a lot of bad ones.
Oh, I'm not going to enjoy this chat. I don't like looking back.
Do you remember that journey? Barcelona in the new camp, did you play?
Well, I was out there.
4-0?
Yeah. Gotham.
But again, Gary, let's get. Gotham, remember, putting on about the Champions League. For, going back to the time when we were involved, you had to win the league. Mm. And then when we were in it, the first, it was knockout. And we couldn't play our strongest team because of the European rule. Do you remember? Those players had to be left out, isn't that?
I was benefiting from it. Mm. I was on the bench or playing.
Yeah. So that game in Barcelona, there was a few lads missing one. There was a few.
Didn't put Schmeichel in goal, did he?
Is that right? Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. He wanted. I think Ferguson said he wanted his best sort of 10 players on the pitch, so he was the one who was sacrificed.
You could play your strongest team, but again, if you were just talking about that game, Barcelona were brilliant, to be fair.
Stoichkov. Oh my! I've never seen anything
Romario.
Like it. Romario and Stoichkov. Oh my God.
A few times, there's a few teams I've played against, and generally it was either Barcelona or Real Madrid. No other team has done it to me where you doubt that you're
good
enough. Yeah.
Juventus a little bit in the
early days. I never had it with the Italian teams because that was kind of a physical challenge. But with the Spanish teams, even the so-called Leicester, technically they'd keep the ball and you'd be like, chase, and you're like, particularly Barca and Real, when they were in the zone and they had the top players, you were like, all the best getting the ball back. They were. That night, Barcelona, I'm going to say I touched the ball 4 times and that was in the warm-up. We just couldn't get near them, could we?
No.
It was 4 and we were delighted it was 4.
What was at the time? It was the Cup Winners' Cup for me when we was playing, and who was it? I think we ended up winning it, but I remember Parma, Paris Saint Germain.
Did you get suspended in the semi final?
Yeah, yeah.
That was my worst.
What you said? Why'd you go in there, Gal? I wasn't suspended a lot.
I think you were.
Yeah, to be honest, I was suspended a lot. But like, I remember that game because obviously I got second booking in the Paris Saint-Germain. But they were so good because they had.
Who was playing for them then?
Ginola, George Weah up front, Valdo, and even with Parma. When we beat Parma, I think it was an underrated Arsenal victory, that one, because I think when we beat Parma, Parma beat Ajax in the semi-final, and obviously Ajax went and won the Champions League the next year, beating AC Milan. It was like so tough. That's where I think the 1-0 to the Arsenal came from. That was.
Well, it wasn't football again, but when you were like Arsenal were a strong English team, it was when you started going and you still didn't know too much about, you know, Barcelona. Yeah. You're still going into the unknown, Parma. You're still going, we're the best team in England, or we're Man United, we're a good team. And then all of a sudden you play against these teams.
I think when you play. The Bayern Munichs, the Real Madrids, the Milans, and all these teams, I would argue, honestly, at times I've had tougher games in the early rounds of the UEFA Cup, because when you play them teams, everyone's up for it, the crowd's up for it, you know who the players are, you might have played against them international level. I remember the early rounds of the UEFA Cup. I remember we won the UEFA Cup in 2001. The first game we played was against the team called Steaua Bucharest. Mm. Oh my God, they were all that big, everyone was quick and shiny. You're like, Jesus. You're supposed to beat them 3 or 4-0. And you're like, honestly, I think we won 1-0 at home and drew away 0-0. And it was the first round. And I always say, the early rounds of the UEFA Cup are so tough because of, you go into sort of that Eastern Bloc. It's just, and the crowds are not as up for it. You think you should win easy. We had tougher games than that.
We've got a running track around the
pitch. Yeah, it's just, the floodlights aren't working, you know what I mean? You're like,
I remember in a couple of, we played against Auxerre at France, and they had a player in midfield called Corentin Martins. I'd never seen anyone as good as that. I couldn't understand how he wasn't at somewhere else. Martin Keown was doing a man marking job on him. It was like, it was.
That's why he looks so good.
He was toying with him. It was like Geppetto and Pinocchio. He was toying with him. You're just watching him and you think to yourself, this guy is unbelievable. You know, and I remember when we played AC Milan when they had the team, that same team. Because remember, they were, was it 94, when they hammered Barcelona. Yeah. That was our great day where we played that team with Desai, Boban.
Who was manager? It wasn't Capello. Was Capello manager of that team?
Can't remember who the manager was, but it was Massaro was up front, Baresi at the back with Maldini, and that. But you know who it was? You know, like you say, you see.
Yeah, but he must have scored, right? He must. No,
they disallowed it. Right. I got disallowed. I was devastated. But like, you know, when you say you play against teams and you think, wow, they're born to do it. Boban was unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
Fucking hell. It was just like, you're almost like, no one could get near. He was quick, he was one touch, he was running off. It was like, this is unbelievable.
It's funny, you know, because you say you're playing them games and you think, you know, we've all played those games where you think you're out your depth, don't you? You sit back in the dressing room and think, wow. I actually had more of them in the Premier League than in Europe, because I think if I think of us with Europe, we're actually quite successful in Europe. And when we were going for the Champions League, the four best teams, or let's say the top six teams in the Champions League, were always the top four from England, plus AC Milan and Barcelona. Real Madrid were having a bit of a stick. So we didn't really have that in Europe in sort of my time with Julia. Listen, you lost games, don't get me wrong. But that feeling of sort of thinking, wow, you know, sometimes I play against the Arsenal team under Wenger, you'd be like, what? Or you go to Old Trafford and get beat 3-0, and you'd be like,
what just happened?
Whoa. That, you just never felt like you were in the game, or you could get near to anyone. I didn't quite have that in Europe, because Europe for Liverpool is just, it's just like, you feel that's what it is. That's what Liverpool's about, European football, and we've always done quite well in it.
And the journey's back after being beaten in Europe. Oh. Torture, aren't they? Mm. Going to the airport.
I know.
You're the one, so you're the one, you get back to the airport 2-3 in the morning, you forget which level you've parked your car on. And you're walking around the car park, pressing your button up and the lights flash. It's like, honestly, the amount of times it happened to me. And even now, I take a picture of the floor that I'm on if I go away and park my car. The amount of times you...
So what was the bad ones for United? Because about United, obviously, the domination that you had in the Premier League. But then I think of what other teams did in that era, sort of like a Milan, Real Madrid lately, going back sort of Liverpool, you think of Ajax. Man United never had that domination in Europe that I think you probably should have, considering how dominant you were.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is you won two Champions League, but they were so far apart from each other, it wasn't like an era of
if you look back and we
underachieved.
We definitely left a few games go by, but that's isn't that football anyway. We can all sit here and go, does games slip by?
Dortmund, Porto.
Dortmund, Porto, Leverkusen.
Leverkusen. I'll be Monaco.
No, you can't win them all.
What I'm saying is, honestly, Dortmund...
Their teams United should win.
The Dortmund one, I always remember the Dortmund one because I think Eric retired, didn't he?
Yeah, that summer, yeah.
I think there's almost... Well, I think it was like a week or so late, it felt like.
Yeah, but that's good. It's good towards the end of the season.
Yeah, and it was like... It just felt like a big downer. Like a... Oh. And the problem was there were times where we would get knocked out of the Champions League quite a lot, quarter semis, and it would actually dampen the league success a little bit, because you still were carrying over from sort of like the loss in the Champions League. I mean, the Monaco one, when Trezeguet, I can still now feel the silence when Trezeguet scored for Monaco. He shot from like 30 yards. Yeah. Unbelievable goal. And just the worst feeling, I think, in football at Old Trafford I ever had was when a European team scored.
Yeah.
Because it was eerie.
Yeah. Mm. It's not real, is it?
It's not, it's like surreal. It's like, because you knew an away goal counted double and you were done.
What was it like?
Do you know what I mean? That feeling, it's like, oh.
Leverkusen and Porto for me. The Leverkusen game is the one that's still, that's the one I sit.
I broke my foot in the first game of that. And after 20 minutes, Zeroberto was playing against me.
The Leverkusen one, I would probably say, right up there, because we'd won the UEFA Cup the year before. We're in the Champions League for the first time. We're playing Leverkusen, obviously a good team.
What round were you playing them in?
We played them in the quarters before.
Was that the Ballack side?
Yeah, Ramelow was playing, Schneider.
Zeroberto.
Zeroberto. Lucio was at the back. Yeah. But it was still a team that you think, you can win. And we won 1-0 at home. And at that time, we weren't amazing attacking-wise, but we always had this feeling that, because we'd done it the year before, we could go anywhere and get a clean sheet. We're going to boom. What? We've got no away goal against us. We go there, we go 1-0 down and then score to make it 1-1. You're thinking, we're okay. End up losing the game 4-2 and going out. But it was when, I think it still happens now, we knew we would be playing you or whoever you were playing in the quarter. And don't get me wrong, you were a better team than us. You were winning the league. But it was that spell, if you remember, the Gerard Houllier, I think we beat you 4 or 5 times in a row. So even though you were going for the league, it was still like, we've sort of got United's number, here. And
we didn't want you. That. Yeah. Did we beat Deportivo in the quarter?
Yeah. Maybe. But I remember them beating you in the. You played them in the group, because I remember that Deportivo.
They were decent. Good team, them. Yeah. Oh my God,
they were Valeron.
France.
Yeah.
I was playing against Fran.
Fran was about 50. Obviously.
Fran was 56. Right. Okay. He was a bit heavy in his belly.
He was like the same shape as you, wasn't
he? Oh, he was.
He was like short.
I couldn't get near him. It's like, he was the first player I played against properly. I mean, Del Piero was a little bit like, do you know when you're a right back and you're playing here, but then the player goes and plays in the hole there, the pocket, and you think, do I go in there? Because the left back's going round. And he's like, oh, it was horrible. There's a couple that stick in my mind, and I'm going to say this for legal reasons. I think there were a few teams that we played against that weren't clean. We thought it at the time.
What were they? Were they too pumped up? They were too pumped.
Must be the Italian teams.
Honestly, I remember me and Giggs in the mid 2000s.
Around what, the only thing I remember,
we were fit.
When we played certain teams, I would be walking off, and I'd be you're absolutely shattered. Mm. And I remember it, and I'd be looking at players I played against, a couple of Italian teams. You what? And they looked like they'd not even played a match.
Honestly, I genuinely, and I look back now, and I think the sort of. The stuff that.
Well, why can't we talk about that? Are we not?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you can't accuse people of. But what I'm saying to you is.
Just have.
We're not naming names or clubs.
We're not naming clubs. No, but my point is, I think that when you look back now, what came out after in cycling and other sports and doctors, and then you think. And we thought at the time there were things that, like, that I'm sorry, physically, we were fit. We weren't drinkers. We were fit. We were. That's not right. Mm. There's something not right. I came off a pitch against an Italian team once, thought, that's not right. That's not right. I'm sorry. And I know that a couple of the other lads mid-2000s thought exactly the same thing. And that to me is something that sort of...
Yeah.
No, I'm not, there's no excuse.
Italian clubs were investigated for all that. I think there was a coach over there called Zeman. Yeah. Remember, he managed sort
Beep.
Of... No. No, he's the one who documented.
This is a document where people know about this guy.
No. He was the one who said it. No, he said it. Yeah. He accused clubs over there, and it was like a big investigation. He was saying... In Italian football, he named two or three clubs who were saying what's going on behind the scenes here isn't right, and
it wasn't right. And I just think that to be fair, that those moments I think were bad, but were we naive? And I look back now and I think of sometimes of the way in which we approach games, because we were just attack work. We would literally go for it. And you think about sometimes if we, I wonder whether we all come together. I don't even know the manager thinks it. Like, you look back at, say, those games, it's Dortmund, Monaco, Leverkusen.
Yeah, we never changed our shape, our mindset, really. It was about...
He changed a little bit, didn't he, in 2001, too, when he brought Rude up front and put Scholesy there and Ewan Veron a bit deeper or whatever. That was a change where he said, right, we need to get three in midfield in Europe. Yeah. The signing of Veron was to get that three in midfield to become more compact.
But you say that, listen, you know better than me, but I actually think the late 90s, I remember it was a big thing that it was like Cantona doesn't do it in Europe. Mm. And he used to play Cantona up front on his own a lot. I remember he was going three in midfield, I think, probably late 90s. I remember at the time, it was like Cantona, he's not a centre. There was none of that false nine stuff. Yeah. And it was like, you're either a centre forward or, and it was like Cantona's not a centre forward, an out and out striker. Yeah. I remember that late 90s.
Do you know what I think about Eric? And it's something, to be fair, I don't speak about Eric a lot, but when I think, we were so young then, we were 20, 21 when Eric was there. But when I think the pressure and the responsibility and accountability he would take if we didn't win in Europe, I felt like he would carry that pressure. Do you feel that? I felt that he literally, it was abnormal. Because he'd won in that season when he came back and he scored all those goals to win us the league, he almost felt like he had to do that, I think, in Europe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying to you.
It was unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
The way in which he assumed
I always think that because he's such a legend for United. And then after he went, United went on to win, Champions League, and then later on with Rooney and Ronaldo. But he had that situation where he obviously fell out with, I think it was Gerard Houllier. So he never really had that way. He never got the World Cup either, did he?
Yes.
In terms of what France did in 19. Mm. Do you think even though he's such a legend, do you think there's something where he didn't quite do it? Oh, international level, he got banned from playing by the manager, but actually taking Manchester United to a European Cup. Do you think that's something, that he really felt that?
But he said at the time after he retired, after the Dortmund game, that was why he retired. He felt as though he couldn't. That was it. He'd had enough, hadn't he?
He was an emotional guy like that, but that's what made him a great lad. But I wouldn't look at Eric's career and look and say he missed out on that. Every player will have we'll all analyse our careers and go, we missed out on this and I missed out on that. I think what Eric did done in terms of lifting United from where they were and getting them over the line in terms of winning the Premier League, and obviously at the time you had to win the league to compete in Europe. I wouldn't kind of... That doesn't tarnish
He put pressure on himself for that.
But that's what
he?
Great players do and great characters do, and that's why Eric was loved. I think he enjoyed that collar up, give me the ball and playing for Man United. And it didn't quite work out in Europe, I agree. But I think at the time, the challenges for United at the time was you couldn't play your best team. It was a knockout straight away. Mm. There's definitely more opportunities, I think, for teams and players now to win the Champions League. I'm not saying it's easier, far from it. But you got, at the time, again, you had to win the league and you couldn't play your strongest team. So I think Eric would have probably had a few hang-ups about that, of course, like us all, the stuff we look back on, but it wouldn't take away from what I felt what he'd done at Man United, and that was he did lift the club and get him over the line, first and foremost, in terms of winning league titles, and that's why I think United fans obviously loved him to bits. And I love the fact he was emotional, and he did carry a lot of that. What age was he when he left United? Was he 32?
Early 30s, yeah.
Was he, yeah? And he, but I think Eric was fed up with one or two other things as well. I think off the pitch, and I think there was definitely issues with his contract, whatever. But yeah, he, that's what I think makes him a great, certainly a great character. And he, brilliant, another great lad. But he was. No, he was a good guy in the dressing room, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Good lad to go to battle with.
One of the things I'd say in terms of disappointments was the fact that we played Chelsea so often. I think there's something weird, you know. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, some of my greatest memories were like when we beat Chelsea in the semi final, it's great. But we had them, we played them four times, and you know, you'd rather play like a Munich or, you know, just it doesn't something about playing an English
it's like
team
at
York.
United against Chelsea in the final. Yeah. And
it doesn't
in Russia.
Feel right, does it?
That was a poor game, that.
No.
And you knew the games would take a lot more out of your emotion, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The build-up and the pressure.
And you play in Europe to play against, obviously, the best European teams. But, yeah, that's just the way, obviously, the game was going. More English teams involved.
Yeah. I never played against... I don't think I ever played against an English team in Europe. Ever. Played over 100 games in the Champions League, I think. But I don't think I ever played against... Obviously, I didn't play in the final. I was injured in 2008. I don't think you would have done either.
No, I don't think I did either, actually.
Am I allowed to blow my own trumpet? Just for the one time?
Of course, yeah.
Just
for the one time. Oh, yeah, blow it,
Just for the one time today.
I've played more European games than any other English player in history.
Wow.
Well done, James.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thanks, Sean.
Brilliant. Congratulations, James. That's brilliant.
150.
Seriously? Where that money, yeah?
Wow.
Fucking hell.
Giggs has played more, but he's Welsh, isn't he?
Did you ever play, against Celtic and Rangers then? Did you ever play against them?
My first European game was Celtic at home. Remember when McManaman scored the goal? The dribble at Parkhead?
Yeah.
I just got in the I was on the bench that night, and my first European game was the return of that. So we drew 2-2 there and drew 0-0 our own, went through on away goals.
Right.
So that was my first one, Celtic.
Yeah. We got beat against Celtic. The Japanese boy scored, and oh my God, we absolutely killed them in the first, I mean, killed them. And we just couldn't put the ball in the back of that, and they went and scored. What's he called, the Japanese? Nakamura? Something like that?
Yeah, I think it is.
Nakamura or something. Yeah.
He's a good player, and he was obviously really good at set pieces.
And the best
Rangers, remember we played against Rangers?
Yeah, and the best that row was the best
Celtic
atmosphere.
What Rangers?
The best atmosphere I've ever Celtic. Seen in my life was Ibrox as the game was about to. I thought, what the fuck is this? I mean, look, Celtic was
Finn scored, didn't he?
And Galatasaray was like, but yeah, Phil scored early on. Honestly, for the first couple of minutes, like before the game and when the game started, I've never seen anything like that in my life. Noise. Ibrox. Honestly, it was unbelievable. Staggering.
Celtic Park's better atmosphere, Don.
Yeah. But anyway, Phil scored the winner.
Nice one.
Phil Neville. Had a bad game that night.
Huh? You had a bad one?
Yeah. I was playing against Peter Lovenkrantz. He was quick.
God, how quick was he?
Oh my God, he was quick. And he just kept putting it over.
He seemed to have a lot of difficult nights. Jesus Christ. Every time we look at a game, I was caught out. Yeah, did you go in with him?
Really quick.
He was quick. He was quick.
So you just really wanted to be up against a slow, wide player.
We have problems
Because they used to go in the pocket and go in the problem.
Fran Michelin man.
Over Mars?
What was the best atmosphere? So you said Ibrox.
I think Galatasaray was something special. But I think Ibrox for Noyes was the bit... Because Galatasaray Stadium, Ali Samien Stadium, it was open, it was a bowl, but it was open. They didn't have the sort of roof, whereas obviously Ibrox has the roof around it. So I think for nastiness and hostility, Galatasaray, that was unbelievable.
Everyone always mentions Turkey, and they're right. Horrible. I always think like Olympiakos and places like that are absolutely mad.
Yeah, Panathinaikos.
Stadium, they're in the stadium.
Like 2 hours before. Hours,
like, have they got different voice like boxes than we have or something? They've got something going on in here. Have they got microphones in there, inside the heads or something?
I mean, we played Torino. We played Torino in the cup. And I've never that atmosphere was amazing with the pyrotechnic and the whistling all game. It was like deafening. You know, you when someone's here, you can't hear it. It was deafening.
Score?
No, I don't know.
Do you remember we walked out in Milan, San Siro, to play Inter in the second leg of the quarterfinal 99, and they were throwing oranges at us on the pitch.
Was it?
Do you remember that? You don't remember? No.
Apparently, the only trauma the bad players. No, I don't, Gary. Honestly,
I remember oranges. Yeah, weird.
It's a mad tunnel of San Siro, isn't it?
Yeah. I love the San Siro. It's just so big. Like, all the stadiums are like it now. You can drive in and you're going up underneath. But
they were decent like, into that time, weren't they?
And I remember when we got there, they all had on. It was like fucking going, they just come off a spaceship. They all had like, in this long black coat. So when they came in,
Giorgio had kitted them out, haven't they? Giorgio Armani.
This long we went in our two-bob tracksuits and stuff.
Yeah.
And they had this long coat. They all fucking came in like Darth Vader. It was like, it's so intimidating.
But they look smarter than you.
Oh, they look amazing. They look really good. They really did look good. It was so intimidating. Amazing they were.
Now, it was good to play in all them stadiums, wasn't it? You know, you're a kid growing up watching Milan's and all these, you know, these teams and the stadiums.
Did you want to play... the big... I wanted to play. I always remember when we... The UEFA Cup, 2001, the draw, and it was obviously ourselves, Barcelona, Alaves, and I think a German team, I'm not sure it was, but it wasn't like a Munich or a Dortmund. And the draw happened, and we got Barcelona. And we were watching it on TV, and I was like, yes. But a lot of people going, what? I'm thinking...
I want to play them.
I want to play in the new camp. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's like... Because the other teams weren't, like, big names. So I was like, I've got to play in the new camp, haven't
you? Yeah, of course you do.
Just like, oh.
Yeah.
Did you, I used to like it going over there the day before.
I loved it.
And training at the stadium.
Yeah, I loved it.
Oh, that was a...
You can take it in more, can't you? Because when you go out for the warm-up in the game, you've got to, like... But when you're... You sort of just look around, aren't you?
But the beauty is when you play some of them big teams and when you're playing for United or a big club... And in England, you're kind of... And then you come up against these teams, and they look at you as you go, yeah, well, we're as big as you, pal. You know, Real Madrid, Bayern, you go, this is going to be a battle here. You know, they didn't care.
Do you remember when Mick Hucknall trained with us?
That's right.
I just remember the night before the battle.
You struggled against him in the training.
he kept dropping in every little hole.
Someone get to Mick.
Bobby Charlton trained with us one night. Bobby was 60-odd. Bobby joined in.
Yeah, he did.
Night before the game. Yeah, so it's basically one night, it was the we're playing away in Barcelona. I think it was the night we lost 4-0. Yeah. It was the night we lost 4-0.
Mick's fault. I didn't think he'd start, did he? One session, he's straight in. I think the manager, he got free tickets for a concert, I'm sure he did.
Yeah, Mick Hucknall trained with us the night before a game. It was quite relaxed, it was nice.
I know, but I used to hear all that stuff as well. You know, I know it's the night before, but imagine these lads joining. Imagine that happening now. Ridiculous.
Let's talk about Arsenal, shall we? Because obviously it's a sore point, isn't it, for Arsenal?
Yes, it is.
We'd be here all day, won't we?
I remember when I signed, because obviously they won the league the year before I came, and you have, like you said, you have to win the league to get in it. And I wasn't eligible until after the Benfica game. We went there and I think...
Was that straight into knuckles, right, even then?
I think so.
They gave you a two-in at home, didn't they?
Oh, fuck me. The thing is that we went over...
I think it was 3-1 at home. And
it might have been 4.
Who was it?
Benfica. A guy called Isaias. Right, when you play over...
sounds a good player, doesn't it?
Yeah. I remember the headlines was, cry your Isaias out. Like, but, like, you know what? It was one of... We went over there and I think we drew with him, Kevin Campbell. Kevin scored a couple. But then they came and they beat us counter-attacking. And I think off of the back of that, that's when George Graham kind of changed everything to make us more defensive. You know what I mean? Because, like, we got absolutely torn to shreds on the counter-attack at home. We couldn't get near them.
And did you have to play at Wembley a few games?
After that, we didn't get to play in it.
It's funny what you say there, because if you go back sort of... I know you're going back a long time, but obviously Liverpool's success in Europe, a lot of it they speak about goes back to Ajax beat Liverpool 5-1 with Johan Cruyff in the 60s and, you know, all this... I'm not sure exactly what year. It would have been probably 60s.
Early 70s.
No, I think it might have been a little bit... Cruyff's only like about 18 or 19. Right. He's absolutely just ripped Liverpool to bits. Bill Shankly's the manager. Mm. And when you think about Liverpool winning years later, it wasn't, I don't think, hugely exciting football with wingers. Because it was really solid going away from home, getting your 0-0, using the Anfield crowd. A lot of the finals, I don't think, were great spectacles. Yeah, no. You know, Liverpool winning 1-0 in finals, or, you know, Roma penalties, I think. 1-0 at Wembley against in 78, yes, Kenny Dalglish
for the chip Bruges.
Winning 1-0 against. Yeah. So when you talk about that, I think that probably happened to Liverpool sort of 20, 30 years before in terms of, like, we can't play the way.
Did Forrest do the same, though? Yeah. Were Forrest a bit like a clean sheets, Brian Clough, Peter Shilton?
Peter Shilton, 100%. Yeah.
But the away goal was a killer, wasn't
it? Of course.
Yeah.
The away goal was a killer. I mean, you were done, weren't you?
I thought that made your European football amazing.
So exciting.
You thought it was better with the away goal?
Yes. 100%, because one goal could take you from losing to winning. Whereas now it's just like, if you get a goal, you go from losing to drawing or drawing to winning. It could just completely
When a team scores against you, it knocks you back, doesn't it?
It's so quiet, isn't it? It's so quiet. It's like everybody realises, oh, no, they've got an away goal.
I thought it was special, the away goal.
Jeez.
There's certain games, again, I know you have to move on, and like, but Leverkusen, I can still see Ollie's chance in that game. Mm. I stood behind him. You're asking a player, who would you want to certainly hit the target? And Ollie over the bar.
We had one against Chelsea.
And I'll bring it up when I see him. No, I still mention the chance he missed against him. Forget what a brilliant he was. I went, you...
You had to take that chance.
Fucking hit the target. Egg. We need to get Ollie on the podcast, yeah.
I get Ollie on.
I'll get that in video.
Naeem, welcome to Stick to Football.
Obviously, like, when we was in the final, like, you know, the second year, and Naeem from the halfway, like, it was devastating because, like, I'd started thinking about, right, I'm going to take a penalty. He's going to probably get the fifth one. Fucking looked over. Naeem's just, you know when you see him just fucking...
Was that last minute, Ridey?
Last second. Like, talk, rip your heart out and let you see it before you fucking fall over. And the thing is, when he hit it, I just thought, you looked at the goalie and you could see he was fucking backtracked. He's like, Jesus. And then when you saw it going, fucking hell.
Some bit of skill, was there? Wasn't amazing bit of skill, that.
You know something, the opportunism is what I just thought to myself, you know what I mean? You're not expecting it because, I'm thinking about, yes, the penalty's okay.
Where you going to put it?
Yeah, thinking, and then bam, he does that. And then what happened was, is that because... I was this side and all their fans, Zaragoza, they were all down there. And you know when you see other fans erupt, just fucking, my heart was broken trampled upon.
Because you never played the year before when they won it?
No, I got suspended. That was another one. Like the most ridiculous challenge in the semi-final. Fella's fucking going that way and I'm tackling him. He's going back towards goal and I tackled him on the line.
You were suspended more than me, Ridey.
Who's winning the Champions League this season?
Wow.
Before I ask that, which of the English clubs that are left in it?
Man City.
How are they going to fare?
Who's left in it?
Remind us of the draw, guys.
I think Man City. I think Man City is going to do it.
We've got Arsenal
against
Porto. Right. And we've got City against Copenhagen. We've got PSG, Sociedad, PSV, Dortmund, Leipzig, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Lazio, Atletico, Inter, Barcelona, Napoli.
Oh. I think there's only... You can compete with City.
That's what I think. That's the only thing.
Maybe Bayern Munich, in terms of... They have got names who I think if they go on the pitch, they will not feel inferior. But did City beat them?
I think over the two games,
I don't think it was that easy. I thought the game that City won 3-0 at home, was it? The first half, it was 3-0 to City.
I
thought Bayern Munich were pretty good in that half.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy. I thought Bayern Munich...
No, I agree. I think City... Rodri scores one, doesn't he? Yeah. The keeper should say.
Yeah, Bayern Munich were very good in that game. I know it's 3-0 and ends up looking like a stupid statement, but it was closer than that. Mm.
City are favourites.
You think City win it again, back-to-back?
Oh, I don't know.
No, I'm not sure.
I just don't know. I think that, because you're just thinking Europe, you know, it's like something, a refereeing decision or the odd game doesn't go right, someone's
just,
injured.
They're just so strong.
I just don't know who can... I just don't think there's that...
And they've done it.
...teams in Europe. Madrid aren't at their best. Nope. I don't think Munich are at their best. PSG, I don't think...
Can Arsenal win it this year?
I'd love Arsenal to...
Hey, they defend well.
If we got there, counter-attack well. If we got there in the final with City, I'd feel more confident.
I could see Arsenal losing to a team they should beat. Yeah, you know what I mean? Because like that mentality of not feeling...
Especially when I look at us at the
European giants.
You know, you look at our, we've got to... You've got to be more ruthless with the chances. You've got to see games off so you can relax in games. And at the moment, we're not taking those chances, even though in the end... We won the game, but fucking hell, man. If we could take those chances, I'd be more confident about going to play these teams because we're defending a lot better. But
I'd love Arsenal to get City in the quarters.
Interesting.
Because I think Arsenal are one of the few teams in there who could knock City out, but also...
Is that for Liverpool for the league?
Yeah, because I think, as you said before, when you play an English team, everything ramps up in Europe. The prayer, everything. Mm. Your league games before and after, it's like this game becomes so big, and I think that probably would help Liverpool, but... We don't want City to win it again, do we?
Jesus. If City got to the final against somebody, I'd still probably want them to win simply because...
How many European Cups have United won? Three?
Three.
City be on two. It's too close to comfort, that.
Yeah. I wonder if Pep's getting tired.
We thought we were going to get close to you.
Be a very long time, though.
It could happen quite quickly at some point.
No. Liverpool are just made for Europe. If Liverpool are in the Champions League, you think they've got a great chance of winning just because of Anfield and... You know, we talk about...
What is it about you? Well, obviously, you've got a great record in Europe, but what is it? I think
there's a belief because it's
happened
before.
Feed off of that emotion, man.
And then it's almost like the opposite in the Premier League when we'd be going for the league. And you'd almost think, are we good enough? You're always like, but in Europe, you think, at Anfield, we take anyone on. You know, and you think of the atmosphere and the history, and because you've been there before, you believe you're going to do it again. It's just like...
It's like,
I mean, the history helps Liverpool, the history, and it helps other big European teams. It does get you over the line, it's
They do. Without a doubt. They do. Even when you, I remember when you, when City went there not longer, and I was, I remember doing a, doing one of the shows I was doing, and I was saying the thing is that City, I'm not sure if they understand Liverpool on a European night at Anfield. It is different. It really is.
You know what I think helps? We talk about Anfield in terms of the atmosphere, the size of the pitch. I sometimes think of, so when you are playing, when you play a good European team and you feel like you're chasing, you can't get near them, Anfield's just that little bit tighter and smaller, you can get after people.
In terms of size, it can't be
Much. It's smaller than sort of an Old Trafford.
Old Trafford always felt massive.
Yeah, but that much smaller, if you know what I mean.
Wouldn't be that, maybe it's a psychological thing because the crowd are right on top of you, but it's definitely smaller, but you feel like you're not going to out-football European teams, you feel like we're going to get after them.
When good teams used to come to Old Trafford and they were good and they were at it and you were just off it, it was big spaces. Big spaces.
It never felt like that at Anfield, if you know what I mean.
But 2005, you know what I mean? Especially what Stevie scored right at the death there with that brilliant strike.
Olympiacos,
yeah, because like you look at that Liverpool side and you just... I remember that Stevie done an interview and he was talking about... You know, he kind of done an interview, he was playing it down, well, you know, we're just getting on with it, you know what I mean? No one fancied Liverpool to get to that final, and then they got to that final, and again...
The interview, right, he was doing the press for that game, so the interview came out the morning of the game.
Wow.
And he was basically saying, I need to be playing Champions League football, because it wasn't about us winning the Champions League, because if we'd have gone out there, obviously we're not in the Champions League that season, but we were struggling in the league. Yeah. We didn't actually... We qualified because we won it for the next season. So what he was basically saying is that...
We need to,
he was talking about maybe moving maybe on leaving, if we don't get Champions League football. So, one, we need to win this game and stay in it and then see where we go. I sometimes... I think a lot about what would have happened there. If Stevie's shot goes past the post, there's no Istanbul. I don't think Stevie Gerrard's at Liverpool. I think he moves on. And you just think of, you know, the dynamic of that, you know, a local player, where would he have gone? What would we have done with the money? Do you know what I mean?
He might have said yes to me when I went into
Wow.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Talk to us about Turin. The game that ultimately everyone says was your best game ever, greatest game ever.
I certainly wouldn't agree with that, but I think it was a brilliant team effort to come back.
It came to the fore.
Some brilliant players, and again,
it was a good header.
We should have been, we should have been out of it in the first game. If you remember, Juventus were obviously excellent. They were tying, but we scored late on to get an equaliser.
Big goal.
2-0 down over it again. The away goals comes into it, and with some brilliant strikers, brilliant players. It was just all.
That was meant to
fell
be.
Into place. Right? Yeah, sometimes it is meant to be.
You don't go talk about Liverpool, you're talking about that. You don't go 2-0 down to that Juventus team and come back. That was a thing that I thought at the time. I always remember Bex that game saying, we'd had a difficult start, the defence down that side.
I remember you holding someone on one of the goals.
Inzaghi.
The ball's there and you've got
over them. Something. The ball's
you had a bad habit. Ronnie Johnson was the same.
The ball comes back.
Two lads are forks.
Somebody's getting in there going, I've got my man. Yeah, but he was my man that scored. I didn't have someone else's man. The ball comes right in. But he ends up putting it in like 3 yards from goal. It's weird. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're so close to goal. But anyway, a bit 2-0 down.
So you're asking where's your goalkeeper? Is that what you're thinking?
You just don't normally expect. He just kept going and going. He was one of them that went past the back post.
Coley scored in that game, right?
Coley.
Yeah, but before that, I think there was a deflection down that channel where, I don't know if it was Inzaghi, off Yap, and it went over Peter's head and lobbed into the far corner. I was like, oh, my God. And then, to be fair, you scored the header.
But that's what your weird goals are. As a benefit, you go, listen, if you get back to two, you
scored the header, and Bex came up to me, and Bex was quite quiet on the pitch. He said, fucking come on, we're going to do it. And I thought, fucking hell, for him to say that, you know what I mean? I always remember that.
But again, you get that momentum in your season. Yeah. I know we keep going back, Liverpool in the FA Cup that early in the season, you get little breaks. Juventus, the game should have been done. Juventus let us off the hook in the first leg. Absolutely.
Yeah, but then you punished them. That was,
of course.
When the second goal goes in, it was,
With the final, you know, you're saying about Juventus and you got, like, I swear to God, if that was a boxing match, it's fucking...
That's like fate and sort of like, because, you know, Roy's not playing, Scholes is not playing. Yeah. They probably battered us for 75 minutes.
Beckham, I watched that game back for a book I'd done 2 or 3 years ago. Beckham was unbelievable in that game. You know, I never feel that Beckham gets the respect he deserves as a player, because people say, oh, he's off the pitch stuff and all that. His performance that night, considering, obviously, Roy's out, Scholes is out, the responsibility he took that night in terms of getting the ball off him, dictating the play, knocking long passes, he was all over the pitch. Yeah.
There was a moment in that game, though, that it changed, was when he moved from centre midfield to the wide. It changed. Yorkie went back into midfield with Butty. Giggsy went left. Bex went right. And then we had Teddy and Ollie up front.
Teddy and Ollie, yeah.
And we ended up 4-4-2 for the first time. Giggsy was played on the right that night for 75 minutes. Never played with Giggsy in my life.
White York.
He'd never played with me.
White York.
York was up front with Coley.
Right.
And then Jesper was on the left. Right. And Bex was in central midfield with Butty. And we were just all over the place. Like the patterns that you see people, like Giggsy didn't know where I was, I didn't know where he was. Same in the midfield. It was like Butty
and
Bex. Did
you practice that?
We only found out, a couple of weeks before that Roy and Scholesy couldn't play. But because all the games that we had were like last game of the FA Cup final, we had the last game in the league, you couldn't practice your team for the... It wasn't like we had any games in hand to be able to work with. It was like a
bit of luck at the end and good set-piece deliveries, you know, comes down to...
I still feel bad to this day about you and Scholesy not playing that day, because obviously, you know, do you still feel that sometimes that little bit of horrible feeling?
Yeah. You would do. Your standard answer is when people ask you, oh, well, that's life. But it's heartbreaking when you miss a big game like that. But your mindset at the time is, again, you're United and you're going to be competing. You're convinced you'd probably get back to another final.
But
you don't. So, you eventually did get back to another one. I didn't. And that's the reality that's the brutal side of the game, isn't it? But, you'd be heartbroken missing a big game like that.
You wouldn't miss it now, would you? Because I think they cancelled them, did it, just before. Did they do something
You can't be suspended. Oh, yeah, just my luck, that. But anyway, if we won it, we'll go back to it. Remember, I was injured. I got injured in the cup final.
Would you not have been fit for the...
Oh, man, I was knackered, no.
Right.
No, I don't know if I was still on crutches for them a few days after the game. Didn't stop me going out in Barcelona.
I was going to say, I don't think you were on crutches when I saw you.
I left them in my room. I remember. But you're right about modern players. Yeah. I'm rooming with Dennis. So we go away, and I'm suspended and I'm injured. And I have a couple of nights out, and I'm going back into the room, and Dennis is kind of trying to get some decent night's sleep. And I come back to the room 4 or 5 in the morning, and I'm not quite jumping on his bed, waking him up, but I bet he's thinking, any chance? Yeah. I was just kind of...
You and Scholesy went out at lunch on the day of the game, didn't you?
Yeah, we were hungry, yeah.
Like you're on to Courchevel. Because I always remember you walking back in at like sort of pre-match and thinking, they look a bit rosy.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what? Do you know party? Do you know, and what it is, sometimes when we're over there and Scholesy's the same, you're feeling kind of out of it, really. Awkward, you're not really involved. So what do you do?
I remember in the corners with Bex with the
corners. Yeah.
It's just like, you know, when it was happening, you're thinking that something's got to happen now. Yeah. This is it. Man, he put two corners in the fucking...
But even when it breaks, I think the first goal, where Byron don't clear it properly, it's all little bits.
And then
Giggsy composure.
Miskicked it to Teddy then hooked it in.
Remember the defender punching the floor? Was it Cafu?
Oh, Cafu.
Sammy Cafu.
Can I say, you see with Ole...
I was doing the same.
Ole's goal. With Ole's goal, because Teddy, I think Teddy flicked it again. The way he just, his instinctive, boom. It was just, again, you know what I mean? It's just like, fuck, people think, but he's right there.
One touch finish.
Oh, mate. I was very excited for United that day. You know what I mean? You can't help but jump, and then you think, oh, fuck.
When I look back now, you should have lifted the trophy really first time that night. Obviously, on the pitch,
No, I don't agree with that.
Come on with your kit on.
Chimpanzee. Yeah. No, I don't agree with that. No, when I see, I'm not against other people doing it, or I know the rules have changed, or I think you can't be suspended. But at the time, no, I think I would have been.
Would you say no if somebody said?
Yeah, I would have been really embarrassed. I would have been cringing, actually. Yeah. We've been down at the end, me. That was like really late into it, where the lads obviously sent on the pitch for definitely 40, and even then it's like, come out and you're like, really?
Yeah.
You know, it's, you're cringing.
One of my regrets about when Stevie lifted the trophy. I'm not on any picture.
That's fucking criminal, right, bro.
Why not?
I'm at the back, stretching my calf. I'm getting cramp after the game. So when you're like, there's like a shot from up above, and you see like players who have only played two games. Jamie. The right back, a Spanish lad, Josemi, he's like right in, he's on every picture. Yeah. And I'm stretching my calf at the back and I'm thinking, oh my God. Worry, whenever I sign the picture, I'm signing fucking over Josemi's head. You know what I mean? Fucking hell.
What is the one thing you did that was the biggest factor in you becoming a professional footballer? Oh.
Fucking hell.
Fucking your mates off, wasn't it?
It's not a bad thing.
But you know something? We were talking about Marcus Rashford last week, weren't we? About having that right group of people around him. And you say that you can't do the things that your friends are doing. So if you're influenced by your friends slightly, some lads, young lads, there is that element of, oh, go on then. And that go on then would have done me. There was no go on then I was going to go out. I never went out in the first 5-6 years of my career at United until 16 to 21. Mm. I don't think I could have done.
Yeah, and that's your personality.
And I think that, to be fair, I think to me it was work ethic. Love for the club, work ethic, listened, trained, wanted it to do well. I think those are things.
But you've got all the rewards for that, Gareth.
Yeah, but they're the things that, to me, are the biggest factor.
What's the question?
What's the biggest factor in you becoming a professional football player? I think also the other thing, that sort of like a different level, not on an individual level, but the club at the time, for me, the manager wanted to bring young players through. He was brave. And the big thing was the Blackburn night, I think, changed the whole club. Where we won the league for the first time against Blackburn. Obviously, we'd won it the day before, but that night was the best night in Manchester United's modern history. It changed the whole club forever, that. Mm. And then people say to me, what's the most important trophy? That is the most important trophy. It unlocked the doors. Mm. We won the Youth Cup and we had belief, but we were coming into a machine of a club that was like, we were confident. We were coming into a dressing room that was stable, confident, was winning. And I think that changed everything.
Timing, you're a player.
The club was made for us at that time.
Again, the dressing room you walk into, the manager you're playing for, I came off to Forest, obviously, I played League of Ireland, going to walking with Brian Clough. Yeah. Give me that opportunity, throw me straight in. You need someone to give you a break. Yeah. Yep. You've got to work hard and train hard if you want to be professional footballer and take that opportunity. Yeah. The dressing room we walked into, we keep talking about senior players being a good example. I walked in, I can't praise Stuart Pearson enough. I looked at Stuart Pearson and go, what a top pro he was. If I can't learn from him, Des Walker, different personality, but Des Walker, due respect for Nigel Clough, these players are looking and go, if I can learn from what being a professional footballer is all about, and then great messages, messages from Brian Clough.
It's interesting you say that, Roy, about the sort of like what we came into. And at that time, Liverpool had a really talented group of young players. Like, and I don't dismiss that some of them were as talented as we were, like Matt Manaman and Fowler. Mm. Jamie Redknapp, there's probably a couple of others, to be fair.
Rob Jones, was involved in that.
And their senior players were big drinkers.
David Thompson? He was a good player.
Yeah, he was around that time.
He was a talented boy.
Real talented group at Liverpool. There was one year where we were pushing us close to the title, I think it was 95, 96. But our senior players, I felt they were more professional. Mm. And I felt our senior players were more talented, obviously, but they were more professional. And I felt I think if those young Liverpool players would have come into our dressing room and we'd have gone into that dressing room.
Do you think United lads at the time, go back now, Robbo, Brucey,
no,
Pally.
But I think, I know what you're saying, but I think that to me there wasn't an excess that was like, would put games in doubt. I think that the Liverpool lads, I always remember seeing a couple of them in cheerleaders. Remember cheerleaders?
Yeah. Vaguely.
So cheerleaders Wednesday night. I went a couple of times, right? And yeah. I remember the Liverpool lads were over in the corner. They'd come over to Liverpool to tonight. Yeah. But the United lads would go on probably like at 1:30, but they were like, I think, 4 or 5 on a Wednesday.
I'll disagree with that.
But you might, I don't know.
No, there's a few I was out with Sharpie and other lads, and we would be going home at 1 o'clock. I think we've been unfair to the Liverpool lads as if, you know,
I think what's the difference then?
I think the difference was, and I've spoke about this a few times, this was a team I was almost just getting into on the fringes. And what I would say is, the class of 92 had obviously amazing players, but when you were coming into the team, the best players were Schmeichel, Roy Keane, Cantona. Yeah, yeah. Liverpool's lads who came into the team were Liverpool's best players. So Fowler was Liverpool's best player, and McManaman. Obviously Stevie comes in, and you got Michael Owen as well. So
and who was the senior players then at Liverpool?
The probably two senior players who I can remember were John Barnes and Ian Rush, absolute legends, but they were like at the end.
Neil Ruddock would have been the centre back.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have been one of Liverpool's best
John
players.
Scales. No, John
yeah,
Scales.
That's what I'm saying.
But they're experienced players.
Ronnie Whelan there then.
No, he'd left then. But my point was, the yous had them. They probably guided you. Yeah. Whereas Liverpool's young lads coming through were almost, Fowler at 18, 19 was Liverpool's best player. Yeah. Same with Michael Owen, same with Steven Gerrard. You know, so it was never like that. Right. Roy Keane, Schmeichel, yeah. Cantona figure that you sort of looking up to sort of drag you along.
Yeah. It's a massive factor, the dressing room that you come into as a young player and the influences and standard bearers in the dressing room is huge. Mm. It's huge. I think these United young lads that have come through in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, if you're a young lad coming through at Liverpool, you've got really good
chance.
Really good chance. Yeah. If you're at City, you've got a really good chance. Whereas if you're at United now, you're thinking, who's guiding that dressing room? Who's sorting
when
it?
When I came from another club.
Rashford's got to be there. So what I'm saying is, me and Stevie, you're 26. Me and Stevie came into the team. You then become the leader. You've got to grab it.
What age are you captain? What age are you captain?
When
did Brucey leave?
When Eric left.
So when did Eric leave? 96, 97.
Right.
So what age were you then?
I'd have been 26.
Yeah. So Roy Keane, only Roy really started to assume the mantle of like the real sort of like, I mean, obviously he was playing unbelievably well before then, but the real sort of like dominant, inspirational captain happened after 26. But Marcus Rashford is nothing like Roy Keane in personality or character.
No, but what I'm saying is he has to become that. It doesn't have to be Roy Keane. Mm-hmm. He has to do it a different way. Like Stevie Gerrard, completely different player to Rashford. What I'm saying is I was someone to be shouting and screaming at people on the referee and other players. Stevie did it by sort of like his whole ability and the respect he had from the other players. I'm not saying Rashford's got to go around ranting and raving, but just like his body language and being sort of, you can just feel it when someone becomes a leader. I feel like when I'm watching Trent Alexander-Arnold this season, even though his numbers might be the same, it's just the body language, the feeling he's got on the pitch, he's getting old.
Well, when I went to United, Jamie, remember I came in from another club, I had my 3 years at Forest, again working with brilliant senior players, but when I went to United and walked in, and again United just won the league and the momentum was there and obviously the lads are coming through. But I loved it. I loved all the lads in the dressing room. You might go, I know you remember he can play tricks in you, but I thought they were all, not all 100% brilliant pros, because they're like that, like a few pints, like everything else. But I looked around and went, what a good group of people these are. Parks, Andreas, Sharpie, Giggsy, Robbo. These lads were like...
You had Brian Robson, Chalky, Steve Bruce, Dennis Gary Pallister, Brian
the list
Blair,
goes on.
Incy.
You just asked there, I could keep going on. Incy gets forgotten.
Yeah,
but even the dressing room, lads,
he was unbelievable.
The dressing room, the cliff, if you remember the cliff, and again, I'd come in and a big fee, and at the time, you're going, listen, come to United, and expectation, I want to do. But I was looking around the group, and just even the chat, the banter, our first pre-season, we got to South Africa, and I'm going, I couldn't believe how brilliant it was.
Yeah.
And I'd walk with good pros.
I actually think you changed after Incy left, because Incy was, I think, you in some ways, not saying... He was you in some ways in the dressing room. He was the tough love guy in the dressing room. Wasn't he? He was hard with us, but he was always fair with us. He was tough with us. He literally, if you made a bad pass, he'd get on to us. He was massively high standard.
But you said that about Peter was hard on you.
He was.
But you could deal with that. There's other lads. Well, we're talking about other tough love and put your arm around. But at the time...
Who was giving Marcus tough love?
Obviously, that's one of the problems at Man United. There isn't that core of players. Yeah. And we're thinking, who is it? Whereas we could just roll off here. Yeah. You could mention 10 players who would help the younger players.
Don't forget, last season, you're talking about the Man United team going, they've got leaders now, they've got
Maguire.
Casemiro.
It's Maguire.
No, Casemiro should be dominating Rashford.
Is Maguire getting hold of him?
No, I don't think he would be, at the moment. No, he's not even playing.
But you don't have to be playing to get a hold of somebody.
Exactly.
You were casting a Man United towards last year. You said you didn't play. You changed the music.
But Roy, he's been
changed everything.
Roy, Harry's been undermined as a leader in that dressing room by having the captain second off him on it. He's been undermined completely.
I get that.
He must feel completely dejected by what's happened. But going back to the question, is the biggest factor is the biggest factor in your career then the fact that you came into big dressing rooms and with great leaders? But what about on an individual level? What is the biggest factor in you being a success?
I suppose I always keep that. The hunger was always a big one for me, never relaxing. Even when you thought you'd done well and you won a league title, you go, I want to win more, you get a new contract, I want to keep going. You don't want, again, I always said, don't take your eye off the ball. Mm. Keep that focused and don't relax.
Yeah. I think for me, it was training the way I played. I think that was a big thing for me. And that wasn't just me waking up in the morning thinking, I've got to train right.
You were that shit all week, were you?
No. But I couldn't help. I had a thing when I was a kid.
So that
I wanted to win that. So every day in I couldn't not treat it like a game in training. Yeah. Sometimes some lads have a little day. Yeah. They're just floating about training. That was the big thing for me, training the way I played.
Was that every player carrier at Liverpool when you were there? Because that was every player at United, I think. We always trained like a player.
Like you mentioned, where did Liverpool go? I remember I was speaking to Robbie Fowler about where, and he said there was days at Liverpool. So we're saying, how come Liverpool didn't kick on with all these lads coming through? And Robbie did say a couple of times, we maybe didn't train. Like,
as well
whereas
as
the one thing I say at United, whatever we were up to or not, when we trained, it was proper, but intense, wasn't it?
Whether Robbie's saying that in terms of like, because people say, oh, you know, Roy Evans, you know, as a manager, was a little bit weak on the players, and he was the manager who gave me my chance. But I just think that's a personal standard of like every day, you know, just like being aggressive, putting challenges in. You know, if I always remember sort of with Benitez, and it used to frustrate the attackers. We worked a lot on sort of being organised. We'd have offside in training.
Yeah.
And I used to piss the attackers off. But in my head, I'd be thinking, right, we've got to get the line up. We've got to drop off. I've got to stop Torres scoring. I've got to stop Suarez scoring. You know, like, and if you had a bad session, you'd be like, oh, the next day, you'd be like. So I think that was something that meant that I went into every game almost feeling like, OK, I'm right. Because I had to be right. I think me and you were pretty similar like that. Because you didn't have, like, no one would say you were unbelievable ability this or you were lightning quick. So everything had to be right for me to perform on the Saturday. And I think the other thing that helped me is the city I'm from in that. A little bit of, not arrogance, but a bit of cocky, that bit of like, I'm better than them, I should be playing.
So I'd go,
but a bit of, I'd go and speak to Roy Evans at 18 and go, well, why is Michael Thomas playing ahead of me? I should be playing. And actually believe in it, you know, going onto the training pitch.
I think probably coming in as late as I did, it's probably recognising that the opportunity was there. You know, I played a lot of Sunday football. I used to do a lot of training by myself, try to do stuff. And then when the opportunity for Palace came, it's recognising this is it. This is it. And then having a manager like Steve Coppell, who he saw something, very raw, but he saw something and he was the one who used to always pull me aside and say things about how hard you have to work. This isn't going to be easy because you've come out of Sunday football, you need to learn how to be a striker, making the runs, linking the play, why you have to hold the ball here, why you have to make that run so Zeke could come in. All these things, Steve Coppell, he instilled in me the hard work that's coming, and I wasn't afraid of it because the opportunity was something that I was desperate for since the age of 10.
You're hungry, right? You're hungry.
Honestly, it's the thing that driven me.
I think you obviously played street football and Sunday football, but I think when you played for Arsenal, and for England, you played like a street football and a Sunday football. You never left that sort of idea that you have to run as hard as you can, fight as hard as you can, scrap as hard as you can. You carried that sort of mentality from Sunday football into like the highest level.
It's funny because I remember Steve, he told me something because when you're playing and you're playing in the build-up play and what they want you to do because you have to link it, and I used to lose the ball a lot. And I remember him emphasising how important it is for me to keep the ball, but he says, never change the way you want to finish when you get in the last third. You know, I'd shoot from anywhere. He said, never change that.
I
it was confusing because, like, you'd get from the older players, fucking hold it. And then you get from Steve Coppell, good effort.
I always remember Rooney and Sir Alex, the boss, towards the end, when Wayne started to drop in a bit and he stopped turning and running at people and stopped running behind. He became more of a sort of like a link player and passing long balls and sort of dropping into midfield. And that was the one thing. I remember he must have bollocked him, I don't know, 15, 20 times a season for like the last 3 or 4 years that I was there for dropping into the left, dropping in.
You want him to stay up front and turn at players and take the ball on the back foot and do those things. Never lose that bit that made you sort of like a street footballer. Yes.
And it's funny because I remember we played in a cup against some Hartlepool or whoever it was. And the defender just kept going on at me about being a Sunday morning, you're a pub player, you're a Sunday morning player. And I remember saying to him, fucking, there's 38,000 here, fucking, I'm big time, you fucking, you know what I mean?
Right, it's like, we should do a demo right of me and you on corners.
I used to do Gary. You know what I mean? Even when, like, you know the thing what I used to love about him is because...
So the corner be over there. I'd always be marking righty, right?
And he's doing this, right? Hang on, the thing is, Jake, he's doing all that, but, like, the ball's not even there yet. So even when they're walking over, I can go like that. And he... And then I'll have the crowd behind the goal. I'll go like that to him. And I'll go like that. And Gary, like that. Ooh. And it was so funny. They go, way. But to be honest, I never scored one. Because he's always holding, you know? Like you're saying, he's fucking holding you.
There's other players scoring, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but still, I wanted to score. I wanted to say, because I used to, like, there was something about him and Phil that used to annoy me. I don't know what it was. Remember, I used to call you guys, he's a fucking chuckle brothers here. You know what I mean? That's the thing. I don't know what it was, because they were so serious.
Jed Wood.
But like they were so serious, and because at the time, you know, obviously being as jealous as I was of Man United because they were so good, you're kind of jealous of them, and it was tough. Never had an easy game against them. It was brilliant. I loved it. I loved being at that level. Just loved playing against in those games.
Which player that you've played with? It's a difficult question. This it might be so. Do you feel had the hunger? We've all talked about hunger and hard work, preparing, training, working hard. We've all talked about those same qualities. Which player do you feel that had those qualities, but then, I don't know, got a big contract or something, they won a trophy and then went, and you saw it go straight away? Anybody you can think, anybody, not
what, in and around who I played with?
Yeah, just where you think you can just see that, like, sort of think, he's gone a little bit there.
Sharpie was a bit laid back, wasn't
he? Was he?
Yeah. Sharpie's very laid back, but listen, a good guy, but maybe Sharpie would be first to admit that maybe he, with that little
could
bit of success...
Could have done more?
Maybe. I think Sharp would be honest enough to say that because Sharp, he was so laid back. And the manager was always on his case, you know. Yeah. And to be fair, again, obviously, when the Leeds got a bad injury. But I think Sharp, he might look back and go... And I think he'd be the first to admit it that he did.
Because he got... I mean, people may remember, may not remember, but before Giggsy came in, Sharp, I mean, he was literally like the sort of...
Was a Torquay.
Yeah.
And he went to United.
He scored that goal, didn't he? Arsenal. It was a hat-trick at Arsenal. Yeah.
He murdered us. Yeah.
And he literally was like the poster boy, wasn't he?
He murdered us.
So I think Sharpie would say that maybe he didn't have that real hunger and desire to maintain that over a long period of time.
Yeah. I think at Liverpool, I can't think of someone in terms of that, but I've seen players drop off. You know when someone comes into your club and they make a brilliant start and all the fans are getting, you know, excited, everyone's thinking, this is a player. And I'd always think... See what he's like when he has a little bad spell. You know that thing of can you get through that? And that was the thing that I felt certainly playing for a big club, the scrutiny, supporters, the press. And that I always thought someone was I thought he's got something about him. If he goes through that sort of couple of months that we all go through where you think it's not happening for you, you go out the team, you come back in, the crowd are on you a little bit. Can you come out the other side? And I always felt there was probably two or three players we can think of who thought we all thought we got a star when they first come in. And that first little bad spell, you think, oh. They don't ever actually get back.
Yeah.
It's too. They almost don't want to be in the team rather than going, I'm going to embrace this. Come on, let's have it. You know that. Yeah,
you're talking about managers, right, giving you tough love. I go back to Sharpie. I remember he got interviewed recently. He was on, you know, when he was scoring goals, Sharpie was into all the dance and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And he was. And he really enjoyed his football and off the field as well. And he said towards him, when the manager, he obviously says, when Ferguson was having a go at him, he went, I just stopped listening at the end. You know about that tough love or a manager? And he went, I just stopped listening.
Yeah, it goes blank.
Anymore, yeah.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. It's funny. But you said that was with George Graham. In the end, I just, you know, he's just talking at you. I'm not even listening no more. He was too, you know something? I'm not even going to complain. You know, he was the one that put me on that that stage with Arsenal. And we get on very, very well. But like, it was tough to the point of, you know, you'd be driving home and I'm like, fucking hell, man, it surely can't be like this. It should be like this fucking hard. I can't work any harder than I am in training. I can't do any more.
Do you know why I think the boss was unbelievable for 20-odd years? Because, one, he stayed out of training all week. And, you know, he never got involved in training. You never heard his voice actually during the week that much. You'd certainly never heard it in a sort of, like, a forceful way, or do this or do that, because it was always kiddo, Carlos Queiroz, Steve McLaren, Rennie Mühlenstein, all those people. So you never heard his voice during the week. And then all of a sudden he changed his assistant managers every 3-4 years. So he had a different voice. I think managers who are coaching every day, if they're on the pitch every day and then you're on the same voice on Saturday, it's like, you know what I mean? I don't know if that was the same with like, but we didn't get the same voice. We literally didn't hear his voice that much during that week.
For the majority of my career, you'd think of sort of Julia and Benitez, foreign coaches. They weren't managers, they were coaches. So it feels strange to me if you come on the training pitch and the manager wasn't there.
He was there.
I know he's there, but if he's not like something, almost like having a supply teacher come in, you know, and it's just like that. I'd always feel a bit weird if the manager wasn't there. So listen, obviously.
I'd be fine. I had it with Brian Clough, Jack Chat. I played for certainly two or three great managers who'd done literally no coaching.
During the week,
And I loved that. I didn't want to hear the manager all the time. Mm. And then on a Saturday where you're thinking, this is what obviously
come alive.
Come alive and a business starts. So again, it goes to show whatever you've been brought up with or whatever managers you were under. Brian Clough was the same. You very rarely see Brian Clough, or if training was going on, he'd be in the background.
Yeah.
The same at United, right?
Do you think that actually happens now? Because the reason I'm mentioning, because it was a foreign thing, I think probably most managers in those days probably didn't do too much training, but even the British coaches.
Does Klopp do most of the sessions during the week?
Listen, they've got two or three people. I'm sure it gets split up, but I don't think Jurgen Klopp sort of sat in the office.
No, he'd be down on the pitch, I'm sure. But
I think he would be involved.
But I think the ownership. I think ownerships want to see somebody out there. I think it's more a lot of the owners. If you're involved at a club known as a manager with that style, and obviously not with that power, where these managers have won trophies. And he's just coming in and doing one or two sessions. I bet they're going, no, we want more than that from our... The job titles now for a lot of managers now is head coach. It's not the manager. You better do some coaching.
See, you look at Pep, and even, coming off the pitch the other day, he's still... Yeah. I can't see him not being on there every day.
Oh, no.
I literally can't. You know, I look at him how he is, and he looks quite intense, and it makes me nervous. No, if I had to work under him, he makes me nervous.
Do you know the best things that I obviously I don't see what Klopp does any day of the week, but one of the best things that I think he does, and I've just remembered it, is standing in the warm up.
He stands there,
6'3", and he literally stares at the opposition, at the closest point to them where the team are warming up, and he's looking at them right in the eye. He does it.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Why is he doing that?
He does it. I think it's intimidation. It's intimidation.
Does he say?
He will have been.
It's intimidation. I think he literally stands there menacing.
I think I remember an interview. He got asked about it, and he sort of said it wasn't for that. He just wanted to see what they were doing or whatever. But he definitely. Listen, I don't believe that. But he definitely. He said something about playing Dortmund in his first season at Liverpool. He played Dortmund in Europa League, and he said, if I've got it rightly, I'm sure he said something about like that was definitely to sort of
let them
know I'm the Liverpool manager, I'm not Dortmund anymore, and like I'm, you know, because to them he's a god, isn't he? Klopp, he's just left, and he definitely said there was something in that. I mean, what I have seen other managers, where they've got a good relationship with him, go and speak to him. I've seen David Moyes do it a lot, and I think that's actually quite a clever thing to do. You're actually
going.
I'm joining him, and we're having a little chat. Yeah, so he's not actually looking at the. I don't know if he gets on well with Moyes, but I've seen Moyes do it a couple of times, and I think I have looked at it and thought, I think that's what I'd do if I was a manager. I'd go and speak to him to make sure he's got his eyes on them.
I thought the boss. I mean, obviously you were captain, so you'll know this. That he basically, you couldn't go out, could you, until he was at the front of the actual dressing room at the door, and literally he'd wait for every player to go past, and he'd be looking down the corridor at the referee's room and the away dressing room.
Sir Alex.
He'd be literally staring. He'd be stood waiting at the door. You'd be Roy Keane waiting to come out, and literally be staring down the corridor at the referee's room and the away dressing room, and every single player would walk past him and he'd shake the hand and look. It was every week. I didn't realise it happened actually that much until I became captain and Roy left, obviously.
So was that his intimidation?
Absolutely. I realised when I was captain, because like, say some of the players aren't there at the back and say, wait, you're looking, you're seeing what he's doing. I thought, he's fucking actually eyeballing. The referees.
I remember doing an Anfield the first time I played against Man United at Anfield, and the Anfield tunnel's really small, and it did feel like there was a huge presence there.
All mind games, isn't it?
Yeah. I always remember one, that was John Gregory. I always remember this, and he did the same at Villa. I don't know what you're laughing at, but Villa were top. Remember Villa started the season just top of the league,
flying.
And we hadn't started that well, and we conceded goals. And I always remember him being in the tunnel. and shouting really loud, saying, clean sheet, you win the game, clean sheet, you win the game. And it was in you. You're going out thinking, but he had that sort of like cockney, wasn't he? Probably a bit flash or whatever. But I just thought, he was. He's it all flash. But it always sticks to me, man. I was only a young kid going out thinking, fucking hell, yeah, he's probably right.
What's the score?
We won 4-2.
I knew there was a good ending here. Yeah.
They beat us 5-0.
Right, well, that's it. Unless there's anything else we want to get off our chests. I always feel it's sad at the end of an episode.
It's nice, isn't it? Once it starts and then when you get in.
Yeah, but you're on about defeats in Europe and disappointment. Just,
has it brought you down a little bit?
No, not me. You know what it does? It always makes me feel, I wish I was back in, I want to be back in the dressing room. I wouldn't want to be back in there in a coaching and as a player.
Why do you come and be Carl's assistant at Salford?
He's done that.
I've done that at MK Dons. I remember with Carl one time, I've never seen a manager when I was there, you know what? The year what I'd done at MK Dons made me say, I can't be a manager. Can't be a manager.
When you look at the year. You were there
a
whole year?
Yeah, I was there a whole year. And I thought, nah, it's not for me. And I remember one time, I can't remember, it might have been Preston. And like, it's like, right, we're walking like this coming off because it's half time. And, you know, it's like normal, this like normal talking. We're walking, I say, okay. And then he went in the dressing room and his fucking head exploded. It went red like a cherry. And he blasted into these players to the point, and then he told them to fucking get back out. You know what I mean? And that when they came out and he went back to me like normal, looked at me like, and I went, Carl, you can't fucking do that, bro. You're gonna have a heart attack, man, if you're gonna carry on going from 0 to 100 and then going back to normal. That cannot be good for your body, my friend. And I had to say that to him because as good as he is as a coach, when he gets angry, it's scary. I said, is this what it does to you? Because if I get into a place where I'm a manager and I get to my angry place, I don't know what's
He's obviously happen. Not listening. He got sent off about 2 weeks after about
He's calmed down a lot. He's calmed down a lot, but like he's very good. But like I say, I have no qualms. You know, people say, yeah, well, you're always on there talking about management and this and that. I said, it's not for me. I will not be able to deal in that place. I wouldn't be able to work in that environment. I cannot do it. But as a player, love to be back in the dressing room.
Can we have our weekly update on you, Roy? Any conversations in the last couple of weeks about getting back into it? Or
nothing?
All quiet?
I'll be here for a while, I think.
Something happened?
What's happened?
So come on, Roy. Something's I can tell your eyes. I know your eyes.
I could tell. No, there is something because when you start smiling and doing that face.
Someone's trying to take the piss out of you, haven't they?
Well, people do that all the time, Gary.
How's it end?
All the time, yeah. No, I don't know. We're talking about going back into management. Yeah, I think the longer you're out of it and the more you think. The last few chats we've had about going back to it, even before Frank came in, you do ask yourself, and I'm swaying out towards not going back into it. Yeah, I just think it's not worth the hassle and people constantly disrespect you or whatever. Sometimes it's offers.
I can't see where the joy
time wasters.
Where's the joy in the management? You're looking at Pep, who's ultra successful. I remember watching Wenger when he was successful. You're looking at Klopp having to come out now, you know, saying he's exhausted. When did they actually get joy in what they're doing?
And what happens, whatever about Pep's level, Pep and Klopp and all these boys, but when you go down a certain level and you have any sort of chats or discussions about going back into work, I'm not joking you. Do people think you're like, everyone thinks you're so desperate and you sign anything? And I know there are managers out there doing that. Absolutely.
That's why they can do that. They're undercutting people.
Yeah. I've just come up with a TV concept. The four of us are going to go in and manage a club for the last 3 weeks of a season. Right? Any clubs in the 92 Premier League and EFL want 3 weeks, a management
three weeks,
team to go
long.
In. 3 weeks. Just, you can...
Who's what role?
Who's the manager? Who's
yeah,
what?
Yeah, let's get that right. What's my role?
These roles.
you can be manager.
Cheers, Gary.
You can be assistant manager because you've done that before. Yeah. We'll be the analysts that'll do opposition and the Monday night football. So we'll prepare them for the like sort of the post-match, the pre-match. Mm-hmm. We'll do that.
So we do all the work, they get the glory.
Right? No, we're like 3 weeks, end of a season. I think we should offer our services up to a club to have a little bit of a go. Because I think that just to have that little 3 weeks of a taste of it would be nice, actually. Just to see what it's like. Yeah. Just to go in the dressing room. I don't want to do it full time. I have no interest in doing it. Are we up for it?
It have to be Sunday morning. We have to get.
No.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Sunday. I went to watch a Sunday morning game the other day. It was unbelievable.
Forest Green. No, I can't do that. Just in case we get them too many points.
Let's go. Let's get Forest Green. Forest Green. You know, they'll take us.
That'd be League One.
We're going there and give them some love. They obviously need a hug, them lot.
Chairman, out there. What an offer.
Mm. Let's do it, Roy.
Four of us.
Do you get paid?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Brilliant. Another week. Right. Well done. Good. Well done.
Gary,
well
love done. You. Well Jamie.
Right. Well
I like this jacket on you.
Thank you.
Nice.
Very nice. Yeah, very nice.
Jellies on it.
Can you get a picture? Of course you can, bro. Of course you can.
Can I get my lemons in?
You're a lemon.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.